told you last Sunday that I would tell you today what was happening with regard to this call to the church at Sandfields in Aberavon. And I have to tell you this morning, I've accepted that call and will be starting there on the 1st of September. Now, because that's such an important decision, affecting not just me and family, but the church here at Rugby, we've spoken with the elders and deacons this week about this, and we felt it was right that I should not just tell you as blandly as that, but explain some of the reasonings why I shall be finishing as pastor here in the end of August and starting down there in September. And I want to take the whole time this morning, I won't be preaching this morning, and take the next 20 minutes or so just trying to explain to you so that you can understand what God has been seeking to show Lorna and myself over these last few months. Perhaps more than that. Why accept a call like this to go to another church after nearly 14 years in this pulpit? Well, let me say, first of all, it's not. It is most definitely not because we're unhappy in Railway Terrace. Some Christians are very negative minds and seem to think if a pastor is leaving, it's because there's trouble in the church and he's unhappy and somebody said something and somebody's upset him and he's not getting this or that. It's not that at all. If God was to tell us that you'd spend the next 20 years in Railway Terrace, we would be perfectly happy. So that's not the reason. Neither is it because I'm going to a better church and a bigger church. Quite the opposite. It'd be very difficult to go to a better church. It'd be possible to go to a bigger church, but that's not the case, as I shall explain to you in a moment. Why then? Well, for one reason and one reason only. Because I believe that this is the way the Lord has been leading. Not just for the last couple of weeks, but for the last couple of years. And I believe this is God's will for me, and therefore, of necessity, it is God's will for you. And before we go from here this morning, I want you to be sure in your minds that it is God's will for the church here at Railway Terrace. Now, on what basis do I say this? It's very easy to say, isn't it, that the Lord is leading me. It's become almost a glib phrase, unfortunately, these days. But you've got to base that on something. Now, on what do I base this? Well, it's obvious from the passage we just read together in Acts 16 that the Lord opens and closes doors, that the Lord orders circumstances and events to get his preachers to the place where he, at that particular time, wants them to minister. Listen to again to the passage. Having been kept or prevented by the Holy Spirit from preaching the word in the province of Asia, they were going one way and the Spirit stopped them. Now, how the Spirit stopped them, we are not told. But God the Spirit, as far as Luke and Paul was concerned, stopped them going in one direction. And then they came to another place and they wanted to go to Bithynia. And they thought they would go and preach there. But again, the Spirit stopped them. We're not told how, but nonetheless, it was very real. The Spirit stopped them. Then there was this vision of the man from Macedonia until they came to this conclusion. We went to Macedonia concluding that God had called us to preach the gospel to them. God said, no there, you go there. And we concluded that God had called us to preach the gospel to them. Now that is the situation that I find myself in now. God called me to preach the gospel in 1972 to the church here at Railway Terrace when it was a much smaller church than it is now. And now God is saying, now I want you to go somewhere else. This happens in any man's ministry. It's not an easy time, but it's a time when we have to be very, very sure that this is what God is saying. Now, I've had no vision of a man from Sandfields popping up and saying, come and help us. I've had nothing like that. But events I've been building and dictating for some time. I remember a few years ago going to an induction service in Knighton when Herbert Carson was inducted into the pastorate there. And he said something on that day which stuck in my mind. This was several years ago. He said that he'd been ministering for many years in Hamilton in Northern Ireland. And then he said he felt that God began to loosen the roots. That was the phrase he used. And he used this illustration. He says, when you're transplanting a rose bush, you don't just tug it up and put it somewhere else. You dig around the roots. You loosen the roots. And then you lift the whole thing and transplant it somewhere else. And he said he felt that God, for some time, had been digging around the roots, as it were, in his tie to the church at Hamilton, and was loosening the roots ready for the transplanting to the church at Knighton. That was an illustration that stuck in my mind for years. And I believe that God has been loosening the roots these last couple of years. And I give you three reasons for this. It's nothing to do with Australia. Some people keep harping on that. It's nothing to do with that at all. If I was to go to Australia, I'd have gone there 6 years ago when they had the opportunity. It's nothing to do with that. It started 3 years ago. 3 years ago at Brinturion, we were down there for the church holiday. And one of the ladies who's been in the church this morning, came to me with a problem. It was a simple personal spiritual problem. It was the right thing she should do. She should have come to me. And she came to me and we talked about it. And I felt that I couldn't help her. I felt I couldn't help her at all. Now that wasn't the first time I'd been in a situation like that, and it probably wouldn't be in the last time, because no pastor can help in any situation. But somehow in that incident, I felt that God was saying to me that I had taken this church, or I had given to this church, as much as I could, and that the church needed something else or someone else to take it the next stage in God's plan and in God's providence for the life and witness of the gospel here. I felt I'd come to an, or almost was coming to an end, and I was no more I could give. You see, I believe there are limits to any man's ministry. And I believe that we're all different in the ministry. And that our ministry can go so far, and perhaps something else needs to come along and take it the next step. And I believe that I was right in God's will and God's providence to come here. And I believe now that my ministry has come to an end and someone else needs to come and take the church the next step in the providence of God. So the first loosening of the roots, and I can say this honestly before God, was my concern for the spiritual well-being of the church here in River Terrace. That I felt someone else was needed to take it that next step. I shared this with the elders at the time, and we talked about it, and we prayed about it. That was the first step. The second step came then 2 years ago. Now, ever since I came here in 72, I had no desire whatsoever to go back to Wales. None at all. We always make lots of jokes about the Welsh and the English, particularly at the time of Twickenham, and we enjoy that and we give and we take, but I had never any inclination to go back there. The work of the gospel in Wales is much, much harder. Spiritually, Wales is far, far worse than England. And I had no desire to go back there. And it was only just a couple of weeks ago that I was talking about this to Roger Coole in Melbourne, and he said to me, I can remember the time, he said, when you told me you'd never go back to Wales. And I'd said that to him, and I'd said it to one another two people. But then 2 years ago, that all changed. And there was a desire to go back. Now, I don't know why. And I don't know why it happened or why it came. But that desire came, and that desire increased. Now, it's not the hiraeth, it's not the longing that a lot of Welsh people have to go back to Wales, because the Welsh don't transplant very easily. And it isn't that sort of longing just to go back, that sort of hiraeth thing. It's more than that. I believe the Lord has been creating a desire in my heart for the last 2 years or more, not just to go back to a church, but to go back to the gospel work in South Wales, because the need there is enormous. Now, just about at that time when this was beginning to happen, three churches approached me with a view of going as pastor. One in the south of England, one in Liverpool, and one in South Wales. And they all happened about the same time, just over 2 years ago. And I said no to those three churches. I didn't really give it much consideration. I said no. There was some consideration with one of them, but in the end I said no, because I didn't feel it was the right time. I believe that God was loosening the roots. I believe that there was someone else needed here. I believe that I was eventually to go back to South Wales. But I didn't feel that was the right time. And so I said no. But now I do feel it's the right time. And that comes to my third point. Why do I feel this is the right time? Let me fill you in on the events of the last couple of months first, particularly with regard to Sandfields. On November the 20th, I had a phone call from the church at Sandfields, Aberavon, asking me would I go and preach there on a Sunday with a view to the pastorate. And I said no, because there was no Sundays. I didn't have a free Sunday for 2 or 3 years. And there was no way I could go. Well, they said, well, will you come on a midweek? And I said, well, I would be prepared to perhaps do that, because I didn't feel it was right to close the door now, as I had previously when calls came like that. And they said, well, will you come in the beginning of December, in a couple of weeks' time? And again, I said no. I'd only just started back preaching here after the heart attack, and I didn't feel it was right to be preaching away. And so I said, well, if you want me, I'll come after Christmas. And so I preached there on New Year's Day, on January the 1st. It was the first time I'd ever preached in that church. I preached on a Saturday night meeting, man's meeting, 20 years ago. But it was the first time I'd ever preached to the church there. So I went on January the 1st. I went again midweek, on the 20th, 3 weeks later. And then on the Thursday before I went to Australia, I received a letter from the elders there saying that the elders wanted to unanimously recommend to the church that they call me as pastor. Now, in the providence of God, that letter came on the Thursday, and we had an elders and deacons prayer meeting on the Friday. So I shared that with the elders and deacons. The elders had known about the invitation to Sandfields before Christmas when I had it first. We have that sort of relationship, that when something happens like that, I can share it with these men. I think that's only right and proper anyway. So the elders and deacons were informed about this, and we prayed about this just before I went to Australia on the Friday night. There was no call, and it could have all died a death, and therefore nothing was said to the church. There was nothing to say. It was just the beginnings of an inquiry. When we'd been in Australia for a couple of weeks, on the 20th of February, I received a letter. It was a wet letter waiting for us when we got to Newcastle in New South Wales, with this call from the church at Sandfields. And then you knew about it soon after that, because the trouble is that things get out. And rumors were all over South Wales before I ever went to preach, before Christmas. Diane was being told in my succumber that I was going to go to Sandfields. I hadn't even been to Sandfields. I never preached there then. But rumors do go very, very quickly in a very tight, small community like South Wales, and they do spread quickly up to England as well. In fact, when I got to a place called Tamworth in New South Wales, the man who picked us up in the car said, what's this about you going back to South Wales? That was New South Wales. All that way, rumors go. The evangelical grapevine stretches a long, long way. But there was nothing. I hadn't preached. I had the call on the 20th, and you knew about it soon after that. And I'm glad you knew about it, because this doesn't come so much as a shock, perhaps, if it was a bare statement this morning. And I went to see the elders, as I told you, last Tuesday. And I accepted the call, because I felt there was nothing else we could do. We had to accept this call, because I felt very clearly this is what God was leading. Now, why this time? And why this church? Well, this time, for several reasons. I think the events of the last 2 years have been very significant. The last 2 years, God has taken me right out of the center of activities here in the church. For 20-odd years in the ministry, I hardly had a day's illness. I'd missed 2 Sundays way back in the 60s with the flu preaching. And then suddenly, 64 and 65, bang, everything seemed to be going wrong. 64, I was only in the pulpit here on 26 Sundays of the year. And then last year, I was off for 10 weeks again with a heart attack. And I was taken right out of the center of things. Now, up to that point, I'd been right in the center of everything. When I came to the church first, we were a much smaller church, a much weaker church. I was Sunday school superintendent. I was running both the Bible clubs on a Wednesday night. I did the 6 o'clock one, then I did the one that followed it. And everything, in a sense, revolved around the pastor. And for a number of years, and this is just a plain statement of fact, for a number of years, everything that was initiated in the church was initiated by me. Now, that's changed the last few years. It's changed drastically, and I praise God it has. Because with me being taken out of the center of things, the church hasn't collapsed as some people silly thought it would. The church survived. And the elders and the deacons and other areas in the church came into more prominence. And that's got to be good. I wonder if you realize what quality elders and deacons you've got in this church. Quality. And they've come to the forefront in the last 2 years because I have been pushed to one side by God. Not by them, not by me, but by these illnesses, which I would say is by God. And so I feel at this time the leadership in the church is stronger than it's ever been. That's why the leadership comes under some criticism recently, because it's stronger. When it's not strong, you'll criticize it. But because it's stronger, and being what it biblically is supposed to be in terms of eldership and diaconate, then it comes to the forefront, and I think that's a healthy thing in the life of the church. You know, we all say we don't believe in a one-man ministry in theory, but we tend to believe it in practice. But thank God God's moved us from that position. And there's one reason why I think this time is right. Another thing is this. The Australia trip enabled Lorna and myself to think and pray over this call objectively, outside of the pressures of Railway Terrace. And I thank God it came when we were away, because we were right away. We could think very freely and objectively. We weren't looking in your faces all the time when we were trying to make the decision. You know what I mean? You can be under a sort of emotional pressure, which is unintentional, but it's nonetheless very real. And we were away from all that, and we could think and talk about this thing and pray about it. And as we did so, it became more and more impressed upon our minds that this was of God, that this was the way that God was leading. Now, it's not very easy to itemize that in particular points on occasions, but it became an overwhelming sense. These circumstances that I mentioned were beginning to unfold, but also this overwhelming sense of our spirits bearing witness with God's spirit, I suppose, that this was right. It wasn't what we particularly wanted, but it was right. And there was a peace in our hearts about this is what God was doing. And that began to be more and more apparent. When I was in Australia, the Lord showed me, and I believe this very clearly, the Lord showed me what I was to preach from this pulpit in the months before I leave. And that was before we'd ever made the mind up about the call. And very clearly one Sunday, and when I was listening to another man preach, it was the only time in Australia I heard anybody else preach. And this became very clear to you. And the amazing thing is this. What the Lord took me to that morning was the first epistle of Timothy. And he took me to a verse in that epistle, which was to be the center of a series of sermons, which I start in the next 1 or 2 weeks. And the whole of the epistle of Timothy revolved around it. And that verse was the very verse that Stuart Elliott was preaching on Wednesday night. I have written these things to you, says Paul, that you might know how men ought to behave in the church of God, which is the pillar and the ground of the truth. And I found that quite staggering when Stuart began to talk about that on Wednesday. Because when I said yes to the church at Sandfields on Tuesday night, the moment I said yes, my heart sank. My heart sank. I said, what have I done? I knew it was right. I knew there was nothing else I could do, but still my heart sank. And I began to wonder, well, is this right? And then we came into this meeting here on Wednesday with Stuart Elliott, who knew nothing about this business, as far as I knew anyway. He introduces by speaking about that text which God has showed me I was to open up over a period of 10 weeks or so. And then many other things that Stuart said confirmed this. And Lorna said to me when we got home, the whole thing was confirmed again tonight in what Stuart Elliott was doing. And the elders and deacons said the same thing when we spoke about it on Tuesday night. Many things that Stuart said with regard to his call to Lausanne were being paralleled and were being confirmed in our hearts that this really was of God. So that's why I feel this is the right time. And why this church, Sandfields? Well, Sandfields is a church with a great history. Many of you will have read the Ian Murray's biography of Dr. Lloyd-Jones in last year or so, and you see that he did amazing ministry under Dr. Lloyd-Jones. It was his first pastorate 50 years ago. And in the 50 years since then, he has had 4 pastors. I know 3 of them personally. And he does good ministry. But now it is a church in the doldrums. I said to the elders last Tuesday night, how would you see the spiritual condition of your church? And they said to me, we are a church in the doldrums. They've gone lost somewhere. It's a church with a great reputation because of the doctor, but that was 50 years ago. Now, in their estimation, it is a church in the doldrums. There is no young people's work at all in that church. There are barely 15 children in Sunday school in that church. It's an elderly congregation, much older than ours as a congregation. It's less than half the size of Railway Terrace. They've been 2.5 years without a pastor. Port Talbot is a town of about 40,000 people, where unemployment is running at 18%. That's about half again the national average. It's a town which all life was centered on the steelworks, and the steelworks has been run down, as most steelworks are in recent years, 18% unemployment. Sandfields is a most drab and depressing area. We were down there, we took little Jonathan, beginning of the year, I think in the spring of last year, down to a little walk along the beach at Aberavon, and we were just saying, what a dump of a place this is. It's drab, it looks like it could do with a coat of paint, the whole thing is drab and depressing, and there is nothing attractive about it whatsoever. We drove back into Rugby on Wednesday morning, and we're driving in through Bilton, and the comparison with driving in through Bilton and driving into Sandfields, where you're in a different world altogether. And yet, I believe that God is calling me to do a job for him there. There is nothing attractive about Sandfields, either in the area or in the church. It's going to be hard work, an awful lot of hard work. But I believe it's a job that God has called me to do. What that church needs, the moment I went there and began to look at that church, it seemed apparent to me that what that church needs are the sorts of gifts and abilities that God has given me. You see, every minister is different. I'm different as chalk and cheese from the previous minister who was here, and the next fellow will be as different from me. We're all different. We've all got different strengths and different weaknesses and different temperaments and different abilities. And very often a good man can be the wrong man in the wrong church. But I believe that the gifts that God has given me are the right gifts for that church at this time. And this was confirmed last weekend for me again. I came back from Australia with messages for four ministers. And I had to phone these four ministers last weekend with messages from Australia. All men who know the South Wales situation very well. And as I spoke to them and gave them a message, they all said to me, what about Sandfields? They all knew about it. What about Sandfields? And I said to them, what do you think? And they all said to me quite unsolicited the same thing. They said, what that church needs are the gifts that God has given you. And one of them, Howell Jones, who was from Aberavon, from Port Talbot, he said to me, if someone doesn't go there soon, that church is going to be lost. And that was exactly the same, virtually the same thing that Stuart Ollett was saying about Lausanne, wasn't it? If he didn't go there, then the gospel light was to grow. That's what Howell said to me. And these other men said the same thing. And that was a confirmation again that God was sending me there to do a job of work for him. My one fear, I suppose, was whether I was fit enough, because there's going to be a tremendous lot of work. Whether I was fit enough. But the Australia trip answered that. This is why I feel in many ways the Australia trip was right. I was convinced of that from the beginning. It was right. And this is another reason why it was right. And preaching all at the amount of times as I did when I was out there, it confirmed to me I was fit enough. And the last confirmation, I suppose, is this. That all I've been saying to you now this morning is also the complete conviction of the elders of this church. And as we talked about it on Thursday night, the deacons also. So the deacons and the elders of the church also feel that it is right that I should go from here to Sandfields. Not because they're glad to get rid of me. I hope not anyway. But because they feel it's God's will, and because they are spiritual enough men to recognize that God's will is the only thing that matters. And that, in a sense, is the final confirmation. Peter's received a letter this week from the elders of Sandfield to our elders, asking them to release me from this pastorate. That's the right way to do it, it seems to me. Now, one church can write to another church and say, we feel that God is in this. And we want you a backing on it as well. No resentment, nor you at pinching our man, or anything silly like that. But two groups of churches, or two churches, recognizing that God is leading this way. Now lastly, where does this leave Railway Terrace? Well, the answer is simple. It leaves Railway Terrace right in the center of God's will. If all that I've been saying now is true, then it leaves this church right in the center of God's will. It leaves this church with a tremendously exciting time before them. Whatever has been behind, there's a tremendously exciting time, waiting to see what God is going to do. Because if it is right for me to go, then it is right for the church here at Railway Terrace. And if God is taking me to another pastorate, then God, surely we believe this, God already has got the name of the man that he wants to come and pastor this church. We don't know it. He doesn't know it. But God knows it. God doesn't start looking around now and saying, now who shall I put there? He is a God of sovereign purpose and a God of sovereign providence. And he knows already who that man is who he will call to this pastorate. And our job is to pray that God would show us. And that God would show this person, whoever he is. Might be a man who stood in this pulpit before. Might be a man we've never even seen before. But God knows. And that's an exciting time, it seems to me. And that's being right in the center of God's purpose. But it can also be a difficult time. But it will only be a difficult time if we lose sight of God's will. If we start saying, oh, what's going to happen now? He's going, what's going to happen now? Then that's the wrong approach to the whole thing. If we see this as God's will and God's direction, then we will not lose heart. We will not lose our heads. We will not be silly. We will say, well, God is working, and praise the Lord for that. And we will wait on the Lord, and we will see what God's going to do for us. Now, parting can be a terrible thing. I'm going to be here another 4.5 months, and I think we will probably dread the end of August, because it's going to be a bigger wrench for us, I tell you this, than it will be for you. To move from a church where we've seen so many come under blessing, and so many of you have been converted in our time here, and we've known so much deep friendship and fellowship and oneness and love together in the Lord Jesus Christ. It's not going to be easy, but it's God's will. And in the end, it's the only thing that matters. But it'll be a trying time, you see. And your character and your spiritual depth will be revealed over the next 6, 8, 10 months, whatever it's going to take. It'll be revealed in your regular attendance or lack of it. It'll be revealed in whether some will start drifting to other churches. It'll be revealed in your strength of loyalty and the support that you'll give to the elders and the deacons. Now, if some people start drifting, I suppose to a degree it will be inevitable, but they will be the people who are shallow. They will be the people who've never really been convinced that God called them to this place. I believe if you're worshiping here, you should be sure that God has put you to work in this place for him, as much as I should know that in the pulpit. And whoever is in the pulpit, that doesn't affect whether you should be there. But in a time of interregnum, some people start drifting. They start looking elsewhere. Character is going to be revealed over these next few months, as whether that will happen. My friends, get this into your minds, that God has called you to work for him in this church. And it doesn't matter who's in the pulpit. Whoever comes in this pulpit will be preaching the same doctrine. He'll be preaching it in a different way. And he will be preaching the same stuff, and we look to him as God's man. I remember being at the induction service ten years ago now, of the man who followed me in Cumbran. And I was there as the previous minister, and Derek Swan was there as the man who was there before me. So the last three ministers were there in the service. And Derek Swan was speaking, and he said this, I'll never forget what he said. He said to the church, he said, never forget that the best minister this church has ever had is the present one. And I believe that. You see, I was there, and Derek was there, but Phil was there too, and he's the best minister, because he's God's man for this time. And God's man for 1987, as it will be the best man, because he will be God's man. And we praise the Lord for that sort of conviction. Now, the calling of a new pastor. The constitution of this church lays that responsibility upon the elders. And the elders will look around and see whom they feel might be the man. And they would appreciate the support of you in suggesting names and certainly in praying. And they will invite people to preach it if it's not on a Sunday. It'll be on a Thursday night, and I should imagine over the next months there'll be Thursday nights, which will be crucial, perhaps, if some men are invited to preach, perhaps with a view to the pastorate. And they will need your prayer, and they will need your support. And we need to be much in prayer, more than ever, I think, that God would show us the right man. Churches make mistakes in calling men. We saw the tragedy at Holbrook's went through only last year, where they called a man and he wasn't there 3 months. That was because they went about it all the wrong way. We must go about it prayerfully, and you must go about it prayerfully. And we trust, who knows, before I even leave, God might have shown the church who is the man to come, or it might take a year, who knows. But we must be waiting on God for this, and the elders need that support, and they need your encouragement. And if you feel there are men who perhaps God has shown you, well, share it with one of the elders, and let them seek to get that man to come and preach so the whole church can see if this is right or this is wrong. And we would involve everybody in that. I shall be inducted at Sandfields on Saturday, September the 6th. And I would love to see as many of you there as possible. It was lovely yesterday to see so many from Reading up at Leamington. There were 2 coachloads and there were umpteen cars of folk who came up from Reading to not say goodbye to their old pastor, but to support him on that new sphere of his ministry for the Lord. And we would like to feel that that would happen on September the 6th. Well, I've tried to explain to you. I hope you can see that this is God's will. I hope that you will be as convinced as we are, and indeed as the elders and the deacons are, that this is God's will. It isn't something that we would want, but it is something that God has led us to. And it's exciting to be in the center of God's will. It's thrilling, I think, to feel that God is opening and closing doors. Can you imagine those fellows in Acts 16, God shutting the door to Bithynia? Okay, if we don't, they're somewhere else. And I feel this is what God has been doing with me, and perhaps you'll begin to see it with you also over these last months and this last year or so. But let's seek to know God's will for the future now and look to him that he might draw near to us and keep us together in the center of his will as we commit our lives to him and we commit our church to him, and to him be the glory. Shall we have a short time in prayer? I'm going to ask a couple of the men to pray. Colin, would you pray? Roger, no, you haven't got a throat this morning, Roger. We'll excuse you from that this morning. Mike Pettifer, would you pray? Mick Iliff, would you pray? Colin, Mike, and Mick, and we commit this to the Lord. Colin, please. And then 390. Jesus, where'er thy people meet, there they behold thy mercy seat. Where'er they seek thee, thou art found, and every place is hallowed ground. For thou within no walls confined, inhabitest the humble mind. Such ever bring thee where they come, and going take thee to their home. 390.